This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For most of this hour, we'll be talking about the growing phenomenon of contemporary Christian music. First, though, we want to catch up with a story developing in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Today, in the capital city of Kinshasa, UN peacekeepers fired on angry mobs. Two people were killed. Thousands of rioters attacked UN compounds across the country, furious that UN troops did not stop renegade soldiers from taking over the eastern town of Bukavu. Carter Daugherty joins us now from Bukavu. He's the Africa correspondent for Global Radio News, and thanks very much for speaking with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you talking to us from?
At the moment, I'm standing inside the UN compound in Bukavu at the southern tip of Lake Kivu, right north of Central Africa.
Is it safe there?
It seems to be quite safe, yes. The town has calmed down considerably now since the rebels took the town on Wednesday. However, there's no telling quite exactly what's going on in some of the more residential areas of Bukavu. In the previous night, there were extensive reports of looting, pillage, and in numerous cases, rape.
Who are these soldiers who took Bukavu on Wednesday, as you just said?
Well, in the murky world of Congolese politics, these soldiers are rebels of rebels, so to speak. Congo signed, the parties to Congo's five-year civil war signed a peace accord last year, hoping to end the war that had killed about 3 million people. And one of the signatories to that accord was the Rally for Congolese Democracy, a rebel group that was heavily backed by neighboring Rwanda during the five-year civil war. Now, over the last year, it's been a very difficult task to persuade many of these former rebels to join the government and to integrate themselves into the new national army. Some of them have done so, some of them have not. And on Wednesday, a group of between 2,000 and 4,000 of them who had definitely not done that marched on Bukavu and seized the town under the leadership of a general by the name of Laurent Nkunda.
And why did they do that?
Well, that's an equally murky question that overlaps with ethnic politics as well. General Nkunda is from an ethnic group called the Banyamulenge, who essentially are a Congolese version of the Tutsis in Rwanda, who suffered a horrible genocide in 1994. Now, General Nkunda claims that he marched on Bukavu in order to prevent a similar situation from happening in this town against the Banyamulenge, against these Congolese Tutsis, if you will. However, at best, according to the worst reports, about 17 of these Congolese Tutsis have been killed over the past week, which doesn't quite add up to genocide, and no one's really buying this explanation. A better explanation is that General Nkunda is simply not terribly interested in the peace process. He himself could be brought to judgment for atrocities that he committed in May of 2002 in the eastern city of Kisangani, and it's entirely possible that simply for this reason alone, he is doing what he can to stall the peace process.
As you mentioned, the group of which he was once a part was supported by Rwanda. Some see Rwanda's hand in this affair.
This is an immensely difficult question to ask, to answer with any degree of clarity. One of the overwhelming reasons for this is that the Banyamulenge share so many characteristics in common with Tutsis in Rwanda that the two are almost impossible to distinguish even among Congolese themselves. So one can have, as journalists often do, Congolese who swear till their dying breath that it was Rwandan soldiers involved in this, and yet they could just as easily be talking about Congolese Tutsis who were involved in it. As for harder evidence of arms shipments, that sort of thing, to the rebel army, the UN has said that they have reports of these, but no solid proof. However, if you walk the streets of Bukavu, you will have no trouble finding angry, angry Congolese who believe that this most recent attack on Bukavu is 110% supported by Rwanda.
I understand the rebels said today that they would withdraw from Bukavu. Any sign of that?
The UN brigade, the UN commander in Bukavu, Swedish Brigadier General, told me moments ago that he has had some initial signs that these troops are going to withdraw from Bukavu. And he hopes that that would be completed by 3 p.m. tomorrow. This is not a terribly disciplined group of soldiers we're talking about, so I wouldn't hold my breath.
Now, as I'm sure you know, protesters throughout the Democratic Republic of Congo are angry that the UN forces there in Bukavu did not do more to prevent the town from being taken over. What does the UN say about that? And given the give us some idea of the size of the two forces involved.
Well, first of all, it only took a few hours for Bukavu to fall to the rebel soldiers for these protests to spread across Congo to the major cities. Immensely frustrated Congolese who attacked the UN headquarters in at least five cities, as far as I'm aware. Now, as for what the UN could have done, this is a tricky question. Last year, the Security Council beefed up the mandate of the UN force in Congo to authorize it to engage in what's known as peace enforcement. And it's certainly possible that the UN could have engaged in this sort of thing as the rebels were advancing on town, but their frank admission only minutes before the first soldiers of General Nkunda's contingent entered Bukavu was that they were not set up to make war. And as a result, they did their best to protect the civilian population in Bukavu, but they made no efforts to prevent General Nkunda from walking in virtually unscathed.
And were they at all successful in protecting the civilian population of Bukavu?
There's no question that they have saved certain people, and there are at least 350 people holed up in the UN compound here who have been picked up by the UN, usually by armored vehicles, as a result of reports of attacks by marauding soldiers. However, that fact is that the UN does not have the forces to put a soldier behind every Congolese in Bukavu, and the exactions on civilians have been absolutely terrible. The UN troops who have engaged in some of these extraction exercises tell me one can, in certain parts of town last night, one could drive through the town and hear looting and hear cries for help. Some journalists today witnessed some looting, which was actually a joint effort between the military and civilians. And indeed, here in Bukavu, one is treated to such sights as a recently arrived soldier driving three cows down the main road, presumably cows that he had relieved from a hapless peasant.
Thanks very much for speaking with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Carter Daugherty is Africa correspondent for Global Radio News, and he was with us on the phone from Bukavu in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Well, joining us now is a longtime student of Congolese politics. Herbert Weiss is professor emeritus of political science at the City University of New York. He's currently a senior policy scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Center. He just returned from a trip to the Congo, and he joins us now by phone from his office here in Washington. Good to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
Mr. Weiss, this is some of the worst violence since the most recent ceasefire. I realize Congolese politics are quite complicated, as Carter Daugherty was telling us. We could spend hours trying to understand it. Can you explain to us how these recent events relate to the ceasefire?
Well, the ceasefire was signed in 1999 and had four main pillars to it. And it's important to understand what has been accomplished, but also what has not been accomplished. On the positive side, foreign troops, that is to say the troops, for instance, of Rwanda, of Uganda, of Zimbabwe, of Angola, etc., have, according to the so-called Lusaka ceasefire agreement, been withdrawn. That's one success. Secondly, the agreement asked the United Nations to create a mission in the Congo, and that has been accomplished. Although it is not a peace enforcement mission, but rather a peace observation mission. Thirdly, The ceasefire agreement calls for an internal dialogue leading to a transitional government, and that has been accomplished. What has not been accomplished, or only to a very small degree, is the full demobilization, disarming, and presumably repatriation of the insurgency groups from non-Congolese countries that have made their base in the Congo. And the most important of those are the so-called Interahamwe ex-FAR. These are the Rwandan Hutu troops that caused or undertook the genocide in 1994. They've been holed up in the Congo since 1996, when they were defeated by the Rwandan Tutsi, who are now more or less in charge of the Rwandan government. And they have gained support in the Congo from several sources. One, from the then Kinshasa authorities. Secondly, from an uprising in the eastern part of the Congo called the Mai Mai, it's a kind of grassroots uprising against the Rwandan occupation of eastern Congo and against their local ally, the movement that the correspondent in Bukavu referred to, usually called by their acronym, the RCD Goma. And thirdly, there were also Burundian Hutu insurgents, usually called by the acronym the FDD, and they were also in this alliance. So you had a four-part alliance, the Interahamwe ex-FAR, the Rwandan Hutu, who were linked to the genocide, the FDD, the Burundian Hutu, who were an insurgency movement based in the Congo, but now negotiating to go back into a coalition government. Thirdly, the Mai Mai, a local Congolese movement against the Rwandan occupation and their allies, the RCD Goma, and the Kinshasa government or the Kinshasa authorities at that time. This is prior to the formation of what might be called the Government of National Union, the transition government, in June of 2003. Those four were in active military action, violent action against the Rwandan occupation forces and the RCD Goma. And the RCD Goma, of course, under those circumstances, with Rwandan support, created an army. And there are elements of that army which are today...
I hate to interrupt, but we just have a few seconds left with you.
Yeah.
Can you give us some idea of what would help at this point?
What would what?
What would help?
Well, what would help, I think, would be initially a sort of an acceptance all over the country of the people who are in local control. What has happened is that the transitional government has attempted to assert control, which is understandable, but in many situations, it does not have the military power to do so.
And is this the tipping point of chaos?
That is too early to say, but it is certainly a very dangerous moment, and I would say it is the most dangerous moment since the formation of the transitional government in June of 2003.
Herbert Weiss, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Herbert Weiss, now with the Woodrow Wilson Center, joined us on the phone from Washington. When we come back from a short break, we'll be talking about Christian music going mainstream. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.